Now stay tuned for the Sunday morning wake-up call on 94.7 WPVC-LP Charlottesville. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Now here's your host, Rick Moore.
And good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Sunday morning wake-up call. I'm Rick Moore. Thanks for being with us today. It is Sunday, the 19th. Our guest today, Reverend Eric Wickstrom. He's the lead minister at the Thomas Jefferson Memorial Church, Unitarian Universalist. How do you fit all that on a business card?
We call it TJMC.
But don't people ask what that stands for?
Yep. But if you're putting it on a business card, it's a conversation starter. Or you use really small type.
Thank you for being here with us today, Reverend Wickstrom.
Oh, it's my pleasure. You have a very interesting show. I've looked at past podcasts, and you cover some really interesting things.
Well, thank you very much. We do have the podcast. You can go to SeavillePodcast.com. Listen to what your Reverend Wickstrom says. That's a good way to start the hour. Again, we are pre-recording this program. No phone calls today. That's what allows the Reverend Wickstrom to be here between 11 and 12 and not doing his traditional hourly work.
That's right.
So you are the Reverend at the Thomas Jefferson Memorial Church, Unitarian Universalist. Can you please explain the Unitarian Universalist part of the church?
Yes. There's a long answer and a short answer. The short answer is we're a non-creedal religious tradition, which means that rather than starting, as many religions do, by asking someone, what do you believe? And if you believe the same things we do, then we say you're part of our community. We start by asking, what kind of world do you want to live in? And if we have the same vision for what beloved community looks like, then we say we can live together. The second question is, what do you believe? And so we have Christians and Buddhists and Sikhs and eclectics and pagans and atheists who all, because of their own different faiths, have this same vision. And so together we create the faith of Unitarian Universalism.
It also, or at least somewhere that I read, is listed as a free church.
It's a free church in that it doesn't impose any doctrinal requirements.
I didn't get that. Say that again.
It doesn't require any doctrinal requirements, which just means there's no test to see if you believe the right things or understand the, you know, the formal teachings, because we don't have formal teachings. We have an approach to life, but there's no way to test for that. So we're a free church. You're welcome to come and believe what makes sense for you. And in community, together, we try to see what does make sense. And sometimes, hopefully, it means what we came in with may change and grow over time.
What other, give me an example, please, of a doctrinal test from another church.
Well, do you believe that Jesus Christ is Lord and Savior, or the Immaculate Birth, the Immaculate Conception, Christ rising bodily from the ground?
How am I tested for that at another church?
Well, there are congregations, there are religious traditions where if you believe one answer to those questions, you are a heretic. If you believe a different answer to that question, then you're a true believer. And those two denominations might have congregations right next to each other, each one thinking the other's a heretic. We say, what does the world look like to you? How do you make sense out of it? And then I'll tell you how I make sense out of it, and together we'll have a bigger picture of the whole thing. But we don't have a creed that we ask everyone to recite each week, or a test, as some churches have.
Again, our guest today on the Sunday morning wake-up call, Reverend Eric Wickstrom. He's the lead minister at the TJMC Unitarian Universalist Church. Why was the church named after Thomas Jefferson?
Well, when it was gathered here 75 years ago next February, the people who brought it together thought that it would be a good thing to honor Thomas Jefferson, who at the time, Unitarians were claiming him as one of their own because he said some awfully nice things about us in some of his writings. And some of his approach to understanding scripture, for instance, very much in line with ours. We've come to understand that he actually never did join a Unitarian church. So technically, he remained an Episcopalian, but our church name remains.
There were, however, several quite famous Americans who were either Unitarians or Universalists.
That is true.
Some of the ones that I found with a brief Wikipedia check, John Adams.
Right.
Ralph Waldo Emerson.
Right.
One of my favorite writers, Kurt Vonnegut.
Yep.
Frank Lloyd Wright.
And he designed some of our congregational buildings.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Others that you want to toss out there?
Rod Serling. Gene Roddenberry is sometimes included in the list. Margaret Fuller, another one of the Transcendentalists. Florence Nightingale.
Betsy Ross, right?
I don't think I see her name on the list? I wouldn't think so.
No?
Susan B. Anthony is included sometimes.
Maybe I've confused the two.
Could be.
Famous women from that era.
Yeah, there are.
That era actually had quite a number of famous Americans in the list.
That's right. Unitarianism at one point was a major denomination in the United States, and it was filled with movers and shakers. We had presidents, as you mentioned. We had
love that phrase.
Supreme Court justices. We had some of the greatest literary figures. A vast majority of the Transcendentalist authors were Unitarian. Although I have to say, I did my internship in our congregation in Concord, Massachusetts, and one of their prized possessions is a letter from Henry David Thoreau resigning from the church. And he said something to the effect of, if he could resign from the human race, he would. He did not believe in belonging to things. And that may be the only time that a congregation has held on to somebody's resignation as a thing to be proud of.
Again, our guest today, Reverend Eric Wickstrom. He's the lead minister at the Thomas Jefferson Memorial Church Unitarian Universalist in the Charlottesville area. Reverend, I want to talk about faith. When you tell people that you are a minister of Unitarian and Universalist Church, do you get a look, people sort of, you know, that sort of sideways glance saying, and exactly what is that? Isn't that odd?
Both for saying that I'm a Unitarian Universalist minister and simply for saying I'm a minister. Not everybody thinks either one of those things makes a lot of sense. And the Unitarian Universalist part, we sometimes get phone calls that we're supposed to go to the Unity Church or in some parts of the country, the Unification Church. We're not as well known as I at least think we should be.
And why is that?
By the time that the Unitarians and the Universalists, which were two separate Christian heresies, by the time they merged in 1961, numerically, neither one was all that strong, which is part of the reason that they merged. Some people have said that the Universalist teaching of universal salvation got integrated into more mainstream religious traditions, where you can go into a lot of Christian churches today and not hear much about hell. You hear a lot more about loving God and forgiveness of God, the mercy of God, but not all that much of the condemnation. And that was the core of Universalist teachings. And so if you could still go to your Methodist church and get that message, you didn't have to go to the Universalists. I think the other reason is we are a free church, and we don't have any way of compelling people to come. And so unlike some denominations, some religious traditions where your immortal soul may depend on whether you come to church on Sunday morning, we don't have that as either a push or a pull. And I think that has kept us with a lower profile.
Well, there's only one church, one Unitarian Universalist church in Charlottesville, correct?
That is correct.
It's quite near the university.
Yep. I've been told that it's actually on the highest spot in Charlottesville, right on the top of Rugby Road. And the building site, again, I've been told, is where Jefferson originally wanted to place the university, but the person who owned it wouldn't sell it to him. So he went down the hill a little bit.
Is the membership of the church you mentioned at the start of the program a variety of, and I'm going to, without my thesaurus in front of me, creeds, the membership truly made up of those creeds, or is that just the possibilities?
No, it really is. One way I sometimes explain this to particularly Christian clergy friends is that unlike in the Methodist Church, for instance, at Thanksgiving you expect an interfaith service, we have one every single Sunday because there are six Buddhists, Christians, Jews, atheists, people who are just wondering and wandering through different traditions, earth-centered folks. And every week they're sitting side by side in the pews, and together we're trying to create sense out of this world. One of my revered colleagues used to say that all religions try to address the twin issues of being born and having to die. And that within that, we're all trying to figure out how to live.
Again, our guest today, Reverend Eric Wickstrom. He's the lead minister at the local Unitarian Universalist Church in Charlottesville. Reverend, website?
UUCharlottesville.org. Pretty easy.
That is pretty easy. I bring that up because there were a variety of things to learn on the page. It wasn't just about what time the next service is. The UU Church, and I don't want to say different from other churches, but for those folks who want to find out more about the variety of ways that the UU Church is participating in the local community, it's not just about what you do. There are pages that explain the history and the participation and how you can come be part of the UU Church. I found it to be a helpful web page. Some web pages are just there as informative in click here and I'll tell you something. I found that the UU web page answered my questions of a wide variety.
Oh, that's great. Our communications task force will be very happy to hear that. The Universalist side of our tradition has sometimes been likened to, let's call it low Methodism, a very heartfelt, heart-touching tradition. And the Unitarians have been sometimes called high Episcopalians in a very intellectual approach. And so being learned, learning things, exploring things, asking questions is a big part of who we are. And so I'm glad that you find our website helps you do that.
So let's talk about, I want to talk about your faith and other faiths. Not necessarily versus other
good.
Faiths.
Good.
But I think I got this as a quote from your webpage. We believe that an individual's theology is a result of their own search for truth and meaning, not obedience to an outside authority.
That is a good summation. Yeah. I was actually just talking about this to someone this morning. Again, using, you know, $10 words, I like to say that in our tradition, experience precedes theology. And what I mean by that is in a lot of other religious traditions, there have very clear notions about what God is, if God is, what's virtuous life, what happens after we die. All of those things they've, over centuries, developed really clear answers to. And part of what the religion tradition is a way of passing that knowledge, that wisdom on. And so, for instance, you're told, this is what God's like, and then encouraged to look around you in the world and find experiences that line up with that. We do the opposite. We suggest that your life is one of the great scriptures, and the meaning in you've learned in your life that you've experienced is as valid as any great religious text. So we say, what have been your experience of the holy? What is your experience of the great mysteries? What have been your answers? And then, what do we call those things? And so this morning, somebody who was saying they did not believe in the God they had learned about in Sunday school when they were growing up, but believed in the spirit of human community and that it was somehow beyond our understanding, but it was powerful and potent, and we could tap into it, and it could infuse us. And I said, well, then let's call that thing God, because that sounds like a good definition to me.
How do you, or do you, or do others in your church go beyond the doors to seek people who don't believe in God and who don't find experiences, don't believe that any of their experiences would meet that definition, so that you can say, let me, you know, put my arm around your shoulder and help you rethink that. And say that what that event, that happening, could be looked at from this manner. Mm-hmm. Instead of waiting for people to come to church, mm-hmm. when somebody comes to church, I think that they're already sort of have the door open, waiting for someone to lead them to that belief, to that understanding, to that faith, or they already do. I mean, people who yeah. come weekly, who come multiple times, as opposed to the mission, the missionary going out.
Right.
What happens at UU?
Well, that's one of my critiques of our tradition. We have for far too long held ourselves to be the best kept secret in town, partly because we don't have a truth we want to convert people to. We are sometimes sloppily said that you can believe anything you want in one of our congregations. Well, that's a hard sell, if you will. It's hard to go out and say, come on in so you can keep believing what you want to. We can't teach you a different way of seeing the world that will be in common with everybody else in our congregation, because that's just not the way it works. But we do have increasing awareness that the world needs the kind of open, inclusive, welcoming faith that we do have. And so we're learning ways to reach out. I don't know if I'm already talking too long, but recently we had a newcomer gathering for folks who've been coming to the church for 1, 2, 3 weeks. And very often there are a handful of people, most of whom have been UUs somewhere else, and they've moved to town, and so they found our congregation and they're coming. This time there were 33 people in the room, the vast majority of whom had never been a Unitarian Universalist, many of whom had never been in a church since they were old enough to stop going to whatever church their parents made them go to when they were kids. One said that she was there because the night after the election, we offered a circle of healing for people who were feeling pain. She wasn't able to come to that, but said, I want to go to a church that does that. We have a Black Lives Matter banner, not only outside in the front of our congregation, but inside in the sanctuary, right up front, right above where the preacher stands each week. And I often say that's an ongoing sermon for us. And there are people who've come because they want to find out what kind of faith tradition does that. We now have signs above every one of our entrance doors that say, both in Arabic and in English, peace be upon you, assalamu alaikum. And on our main front doors, we have larger signs, again in Arabic and in English, that say, we support our Muslim neighbors. We're active in interfaith work. We're active in justice work. And people are responding to that and saying, what kind of religion does these things? And then they come, and as somebody told me, the friend they brought to church 2 weeks ago left saying, I had no idea something like this existed. And that's more of what we do than knocking on doors and trying to sell our particular version of truth.
Again, our guest today, Reverend Eric Wickstrom. He is the lead minister at the Charlottesville Thomas Jefferson Memorial Church Unitarian Universalist. Back in action here on the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. Thank you for being with us. This is February 19th. The show is pre-recorded. No phone calls today. My apologies. You'll just have to listen to Reverend Wickstrom and I talk about faith and religion that not everybody seems to know about. They always give you that second glance. But you're familiar with that now.
Oh, yeah.
How many? What's the counted membership at your church?
We're a little shy of 450 people who are formally on our books. We have this great membership book that has the signatures of every person who has decided to formalize their membership going back to 1943 when the congregation started. And I try to make the point, our membership committee is not always happy with me when I do this, but I think everybody who comes through the door is a member of our congregation. Some people formalize that membership, but unlike some other traditions, you can be an active participant in anything we do just about without being a quote-unquote member. And I think that's really important, that it gives you a chance to make your membership a response to your involvement rather than the doorway in.
So let me go back to faith and different faiths and current events, because that's a big part of what the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call does. This is 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. The topic has come up both before and after the presidential election, there were questions about how and why the evangelical Christians voted to put Donald Trump in the presidential office, a confessed sexual predator, along with some other issues that seem to be against what they stand for. I would love to get your thoughts on that. I realize that challenge to do this without bashing others, but I am asking to get your thoughts on this.
Well, I just read a wonderful piece. Unfortunately, I'm not remembering who wrote it or what study he was referring to, so I apologize for all of that. But the gist of it was that within the Christian traditions, there seem to be two primary worldviews. One centers on the law, and the other centers on grace. And the traditions that center on law really hold up a stern authoritarian God who has rules that we need to follow. And if we don't, there is punishment. And that God's sometimes contradictory dictates are not something we should even question. We should just say, thy will be done. And I'm not saying that's not a fine way into the deeper mysteries of life, but that's one approach. The other is grace-filled, and it says that more than anything else, God is love. And love is more expansive. Love is more flexible. Love does not require you to adhere to some purity code. Love is love. And what this author was saying was, based on some study, again, can't remember, but that the evangelicals who voted for Trump overwhelmingly were in traditions that focused on the law. And so an authoritative figure who is the top of patriarchy and who says, don't question what I'm doing, trust me, and I will make things all well. And if you don't, I threaten you with all the things that people were threatened with. And so it made sense. This was somebody who was an expression of what they thought religion was all about.
That leads me to the part about why some people mock other faiths, and whether they are mocking your faith, the Unitarian Universalist, or whether they're mocking Islamic, whether they're mocking Baptist, Southern Baptist. Traditionally, the faith that you believe in, one of the first things it says is to treat others with kindness. And it doesn't matter whether you are believing in Islamic, whether you are believing in a Baptist faith, whether you are believing in a Unitarian Universalist faith. So I would like to get your thoughts on how the faith that you believe in escapes your mind enough to allow you to mock another faith.
That's a question I ask myself a lot, and it may have it may point back to this division between mercy and law. One of the things that I am so glad we have moved beyond, apparently back at the time of Martin Luther, it was thought that the soul of the priest was what would be punished for sins and errors in the congregation. And so if people in the congregation were thinking and doing heretical things, the priest would spend extra time in hell for that. So it became really important to be able to cut away those people who were thinking the wrong things and doing the wrong things according to that tradition. So it became really important to be able to discern between us and them. And so we believe these things, you believe those things, we are right, you are wrong, and we should be separate. Which I guess goes back to our tribal origins too. As a species, we seem to have, from our earliest days, worked in us-them thinking. But I don't think that's the only way to be in the world. And we at our congregation often say that there is no us and them, there's only we. And we might disagree with each other on things, sometimes tremendously. And yet, the first principle of Unitarian Universalism is the affirmation and desire to promote the idea of the inherent worth and dignity of every person. Just this morning, our youth group was leading worship, and before going into a section of the service where they wanted us to do some justice work, and they were letting us know that there would be cards to send to representatives, the young woman who was speaking at that moment said that our first principle calls us to affirm the inherent worth and dignity of every person, including our elected officials with whom we disagree. And so please, when you're filling out the cards, be respectful. Not engage in slamming and shaming and critiquing in that way. And that's true in lots of other traditions also. One of the things that when we talk about other faiths, including the one I serve and others in this world of thousands of different religious traditions, every one of them has beautiful things in it. Every one of them has access to the deepest mysteries. And every one of them also has really stupid things that you could not imagine would be in a religious tradition. Ours as well. We are a human institution. So at our best, we're in do the things I've described. At our worst, we make fun of each other, and some people feel like they're too Christian in our church and aren't really welcome. Other people are saying people think they're too much of an atheist and aren't welcome. At our best, we find the way to bring those together. At our worst, we're human, and humans seem to do this stuff.
What's the most challenging thing for you as a minister?
Often when doing church politics or just the administration of an institution,
paperwork doesn't count as an answer.
I'm talking about meetings and things like that. I will turn to friends and colleagues and say, you know, I understand why Jesus got in a boat and went to the other shore. You don't want to do all this stuff. I think the hardest thing is the paradox of the position of being a parish minister. And that was alliterative. On the one hand, we are institutionalists because I want to make sure that there is a Unitarian Universalism for generations to come. And so part of my job is to make sure Thomas Jefferson Memorial Church can be perpetuated. And religion, spirituality at its best, is always subversive. It never enjoys the status quo. It always wants things to change. And so as a parish minister, I'm both an institutionalist and a subversive, and the institution I'm trying to preserve is one that, at its best, creates subversives. And that's a tough balance at times.
Sunday morning wake-up call here on WPVC. Again, our guest today, Reverend Eric Wickstrom from the Unitarian Universalist Church here in the Charlottesville area. Not something we get to do all the time from 11 to 12 is have a minister on the program, but because we are pre-recording, we can make that happen. Thanks again, Reverend Wickstrom, for being on the program today.
Glad to be here.
Current events, again, the Unitarian Universalist Church thoughts on the recent executive order.
Which one?
Banning, you're right, 20 and 10 days, I think, that happened. Banning folks from certain countries into the United States. Can the church come out and make statements?
Yes.
Has the church come out and made statements?
Yes. There's always a conversation about the separation of church and state and the notion that religious institutions should not get involved in politics. And people will often say, in fact, it's illegal for you to get involved in politics. The reality is, as I understand it, that notion of the separation of church and state is not enshrined in any specific formal document of our country. The phrase was created in a letter that Jefferson sent to a friend and said this was a doctrine that was pretty important. And the closest thing we have to a formal rule about keeping church and state separate is really about keeping government out of the churches, not the other way around. The First Amendment Establishment Clause says the government cannot create a religious tradition. It cannot favor one over another. It cannot take sides. It cannot, in other words, influence the religious lives of its citizens. It doesn't say that churches can't be involved. Now, the IRS says that because all religious traditions are tax-exempt entities, and there are a whole list of rules about what we can and can't do. And so from the pulpit, I cannot say vote for this person or vote for that person, although lots of preachers do it. But I can say an executive order that bans people from certain countries and then explicitly narrows that down to people of a certain religious tradition because it makes exemptions for people of another tradition, I can say that's heinous, that's obscene, and that goes against everything that I know about the way religion's supposed to work.
And that sort of washes into the giving Christians priority in getting back into the United States?
So one of the things I want to be clear about and perhaps should have said up front, I'm here speaking as Eric Wickstrom. This is not the formal dictates of the Thomas Jefferson Memorial Church, and it's also not the formal declarations of Unitarian Universalism in general. Being the kind of tradition we are, it's very hard to find the UU position on things. So I'm speaking on my own behalf, although I think most Unitarian Universalists and most people in the congregation I serve would agree with me. I think the executive order is absurd, designed as it is claimed to be to safeguard our country from terrorists. It targets countries that have never sent terrorists to our shores while allowing countries that have free access. It claims not to be a Muslim ban, and yet an exception is made for Christians, which makes really the only people who are being banned are Muslims. And there's already a process in place. You know, he's saying now it's a stay. People are flooding our borders. Well, there already is a vetting process. Nobody's just walking through the doors right now. And so, again, every religious tradition I know anything about, as you said, starts off with treat other people with kindness, and particularly treat strangers with kindness. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you, or don't whatever you find painful and oppressive, don't do to somebody else. There are all many versions of that. But the idea that we as a country should exclude hundreds, thousands of people because possibly a couple handfuls will get through isn't what I think our country's founded on, and is certainly, from my understanding of religion, not what religion should be supporting.
As, again, our guest today, Reverend Eric Wickstrom, he's the lead minister at the Thomas Jefferson Memorial Church, Unitarian Universalist. Thank you for being here with us. Not often we can have a minister on the show from 11 to noon. Donald Trump, the man, now the president, ethics and morals. There are issues there. Both of us smiled a bit, possibly for different reasons. Can't say. It's a challenging job. It's not a job that I want. All my hair turned gray just trying to run a restaurant. Do you have concerns based on what we've seen so far? Do you have concerns for your religion and the church?
I certainly have concerns for our country and the world based on what I've seen so far and what we all saw during the campaign. The question about whether I have concerns for our specific religious tradition, that may be the only benefit to being so poorly known, is that we are not likely to be targeted anytime soon. So I don't think so, except to the extent that, for instance, I know quite a number of congregations that have formally declared, and we have informally agreed among a whole bunch of us, that were there to be instituted a national registration of Muslims, we would all convert. And that might pull attention towards our tradition. We're certainly out there so we can be seen. But as of right now, I'm not particularly worried for our faith. There's too many other people to be worried about right now.
All right, let's take a quick break. We'll be back with Reverend Wickstrom in just a moment. And here we are back on the Sunday morning wake-up call. Not every day that we get to have a minister on the program. Let's take advantage of that. Reverend Wickstrom with us from the UU here in the city of Charlottesville. Reverend, other current events. Has the UU, whether it's yourself, the church, the congregation, talked about the Charlottesville current event, the Robert E. Lee statue?
We have. We as a congregation have not talked about it to the extent that we take a stand as a congregation. There's a member of our community that was on the Blue Ribbon panel. Bob Fenwick is a member of our congregation and received great support from a number of people in the church and some criticism from others. I myself think it's really important for white folks to finally learn to listen to what people of color are saying about what their experience is in the world. We white people again, live in this illusory world where we are normative, much the same way in the 50s and before males were considered the norm and we were considered to include female experiences. And yet women were saying, our experience is really different. You should listen to us. And for a long time, men said, no, 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 we know best. In fact, still saying that far too much. Well, the same is true around race, around a lot of things. And so I think it's really important to listen to people who say, I walk around that park. It makes me upset. It is, for me, a reminder of oppression to go through that park. It is not what I think this city should be. I think even if I disagree with that, even if that's not my experience, I need to listen to those voices that are saying it is their experience. And personally, I think it's our job as white people who want to dismantle the systems of white supremacy, we need to stop thinking we have the answers and need instead to be listening to the folks who really know what it's like so that we can help do the things that are necessary to make those changes.
Are you suggesting that when we have our president signing executive orders with his handful of other older white men standing there all looking down at him happily while he signs something that has to do with female health issues and they're all...
I think I'm probably more than suggesting that.
Yes. Well, you know. Again, Reverend Eric Wickstrom here. He's lead minister at the Thomas Jefferson Memorial Church, Unitarian Universalist. Very excited and happy to have someone on who wouldn't normally be here on the 11 a.m. to 12 noon live show. And the show is pre-recorded. Reverend, simple question.
I'll give you a complicated answer.
What'd you say earlier? The $10 words?
Yeah.
Is there a heaven and a hell? And what will lead me to one or the other?
Well, at many memorial services, I start off with a saying that is attributed to the wisdom of the Omaha Nation, who say that no one has found a way around death, that those old ones who have met it have not been able to tell us what it was like. So I don't know if there's a heaven or a hell as it's typically pictured. I know in the Buddhist tradition, that question was asked of the Buddha, who said, that is a question that does not tend towards edification. And what he meant was, if you believe there's a heaven and a hell, how should you live your life? Well, you should live a good life, serving others, doing the best you can in the world. If you don't believe there's a heaven and a hell, how should you live your life? You should live a good life, doing what you can to help others and doing the best that you can. And the Buddha says, well, then the question isn't, is there a heaven or a hell? The question is, how do you live a good life and do good for others and do the best you can? So our faith tradition, as a tradition, focuses on the heaven or hell we make of this world. And we are making both. There are places in the world and moments throughout the world where there really is heaven on earth, where people really are treating each other as humans, and we are treating the earth as the sacred source from which we all come. And there are places where we are doing exactly the opposite. And so within our faith tradition, we would say one is hell, one is heaven. Individuals will have different perspectives. There's a man who's part of the congregation who is fascinated by the work that was done by a professor at UVA years back on past life regression. And he is passionate about that. And we have lots of people who say, nope, the moment you die, you die. And all that happens afterwards is that the composite elements of your body decompose and return to the earth.
Fascinating. Reverend Wickstrom, let's talk about practicing things versus just talking about them. Mm-hmm. This, I believe, is going on at your church.
We try.
It's easy to pick on certain groups. I always do this with, again, this is 94.7, and we are the progressive voice of Charlottesville. It's easy to pick on some of our GOP friends, helping the poor versus taking away their health care. Acceptance of others, unless they're different. Or some of the things at the church, you have some social justice projects.
Mm-hmm.
Right, let's talk about some of those. Chalice lighters.
That's more of an internal thing within our tradition.
People listening may want to come to church.
You'd be welcome to, and 11:15 to 12:15 is one of our two services. But you'd probably want to come to the 9:15 so that you can also hear this show when it's done.
Or cvillepodcast.com.
Which you could do no matter which service you come to, but not during the service, I would hope. Chalice lighters is a way of leveraging small donations to big projects, and it's within the Unitarian Universalist Association. So if a congregation needs to remediate flood damage, as one of our congregations did out in Norfolk, small donations from congregations around the country add up to enough money to help them do that.
You work with the food pantry.
We do. First Friday of every month, we host a pantry at our church. We're also active in the soup kitchen at the Haven. We host 2 weeks of Pachem during the year, one during the winter, one for men and one for women. We're striving to have closer relationships with some of the congregations in the African-American community, as well as the Islamic Society. We've had people we had two busloads of people from our congregation on buses that our director of admin and finance spent some untold number of hours coordinating, two busloads of people going to the Women's March a little while ago. We try to do what we can to, you know, at the very beginning I was saying, instead of asking what do you believe as our lead-in question, we ask what vision do you have for how the world should be? And then what belief do you have that leads you to want to see that kind of world? Well, in order to live that truthfully, then we need to be busy trying to create that world. And so, yeah, if we are a congregation of, what's the saying? If we're a congregation of mirrors that's only looking back in on itself, then we're not a true Unitarian Universalist congregation, in my humble opinion. We need to be a congregation not only of windows, but of open windows and open doors, and a whole bunch of us outside of the building doing what we can.
How did you end up becoming a minister? Was there a moment in life that was the checkpoint?
Yes. I, as a young child, my parents were part of a Presbyterian congregation on Long Island, New York. When I got a little older, I was ordained an elder. Which, since it's a lifetime ordination, I suppose I still am. I went to Methodist church camps and deeply spiritual places where we were not hit over the heads with the Bible. We were hit over the head with love and community and a desire to make the world a better place. And it was there when I was 16, I think, I said, I want to be a parish minister when I grow up. Typical of a 16-year-old, perhaps, a little bit of hubris. I said, I want to be a parish minister so that there's at least one church that's doing it right. But I felt called to that and really thought I'd be a Methodist minister until I reached a point where I had to step away from traditional Christianity because there was too much that didn't make sense to me. And for a while, about 20 years, I studied as a Zen Buddhist. I read the works of Carlos Castaneda and was involved with that. And finally found Unitarian Universalism as a home where the eclectic variety of things that have informed my spirit were all welcome.
Is the Thomas Jefferson Church, you said you wanted to have one church doing it right. Is Thomas Jefferson Church doing it right now, or is it a church that's just about there and you've got, you know, something else, one or two more things, you know, still growing, ever so close?
Well, I'm not 16 anymore, so I'm not sure that doing it right is my criteria, because I no longer know for sure what right is. We're a human institution, and so we create heaven and hell within our congregation as well. I think I've served now three congregations and our association at our headquarters. I started doing this 20 years ago. And of the congregations I've served, I am really happy to be here. This congregation does so many things well. Its heart is so clearly in the right place. There are deeply passionate and committed people. And it keeps trying to do the right thing. We keep trying to do the right thing by one another, by our faith tradition, and by our world. I would say we are as close to doing it right as any human institution could be.
All right, we have a minute left. I'd like to give you that minute to whether you care to say a prayer, whether you just want to share something about the world with us. What would you like to go out? I realize I'm dumping that on you free, yeah, without warning.
Yeah, preachers usually take like 15 to 20 minutes to do that.
I know, but you know, I was assuming the UU would be a little different.
Well, I guess what I'd say is the kind of conversation that we've had today and that you've had with other people that is respectful, that is curious, that really wants to not prove your point, but hear someone else's and is willing to have our own minds changed by what we learn. That's how we're supposed to be with each other. And I think that's how we're supposed to be politically. That's how we're supposed to be religiously. That's how we're supposed to be even in our families and our workplaces. There's so much to learn. And at any point where we think we have all the answers, we're wrong. And to keep your mind open and your heart open and your hands open, I think that's the way to move in this world.
Reverend Wickstrom, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Boys and girls, thank you for being with us. Next week, Southern Environmental Law Center. I think current events will probably be part of that show as well. Enjoy.
This has been the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. The Wake-Up Call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Production assistance and engineering from Sean McCord and Mike Friend. Be sure to join Rick next Sunday morning at 11 a.m. for the Wake-Up Call, only on WPVC-LP Charlottesville.